welcome to the pod. That's my new thing. I say woot woot.
I like it. Yeah. It's Adam and Marissa. Woot woot.
Woot woot. Woot woot is actually an Insane Clown Posse thing.
Is it? Are you putting a T on
there? Yeah, it's W-O-O-T. W-O-O-T.
Is there a dash between the woots?
Possibly. I don't know. It's
maybe it's like woot woot.
Yeah, I think it's like woot woot. And then they also say ninja a lot. But
I think that that's just so they don't have. I think that's their way of saying.
Now that I think, yes, it's their way of appropriating a word they're not supposed to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, but woot woot, I just think is just, it's like.
You can use woot woot.
Yeah.
I don't think Insane Clown Posse came up with woot woot.
No, but it's definitely like, they're like.
I think a really awesome lit owl came up with woot woot one night. He was just like, woot woot. Instead of like.
Oh, lit. Not like, I thought you were like a glowing owl, but you mean in lit in the.
In the way the kids talk about it.
You know, the kids, that owl was very lit. It was hella lit.
Yeah,
he woot wooted.
Yeah, instead of like, woo woo, he was just like, woot woot.
If they redid the Tootsie Roll commercial where it was like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop?
They would say, how.
At the end.
I was going to say, how lit do you have to be to get to the end of the Tootsie?
And then the owl would be like, 1, 2, 3, and then eat it and then go, woot woot.
I think it would be more like woot woot.
Woot woot. All right.
And have more of a. Anyways, so today we are drinking a really fucking delicious wine. It's the La Media Crick Sparkling Rosé.
Oh, so yes. Also, it's lit. Speaking of Travis Scott with his new Astroworld. Never mind.
Wow. I was trying to get things on track here.
Sorry. The wine is lit. And Travis Scott would have been like, it's lit.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So
sorry. Go
it's
back.
It's okay. I haven't gotten through the whole Travis Scott album. It like bored me.
It is very. It's very repetitive to his style.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, I saw him open for Kendrick last summer, and like that was cool because he had a lot of like he came in on like a Golden Eagle and shit. But like, anyways, it doesn't matter.
His aesthetic is amazing.
Yeah.
His music does get a little bit repetitive.
Yeah. I'm not. I mean, it's fine. Yeah. I don't really. It doesn't matter. What I do feel passionately about, though, is this La Media Crick. So this is a sparkling Montepulciano Rosé from Abruzzo, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, very, like, alive.
It's beautiful in color. It's, like, the prettiest coral pink ever. Maybe not ever. There's a lot of wines this color.
Coral pink is pretty spot on.
But it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous, and it has such bright acidity. I'm not getting any flaws on it. Like, this is just...
It's not aggressively sparkling. It's just like ever so. It's like just like a delightful
Everest.
I want to say Evanescence.
Yeah, which is a shitty band, right?
Which isn't delightful at all. It's like
break me up inside. Yeah.
It's just lightly effervescent.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's delicious.
Yes, and I like that it's 10% alcohol. It's on the lower side.
We are recording a little earlier today, so it made sense for us not to.
Are we though? It's noon.
It's noon now.
Hypothetically,
it's not everybody drinks at noon on a Friday.
This is true. So anyways, this is what we're drinking today. I think it's really lovely and beautiful. I'm really pumped on it. They just got to California. I know that Zev Rovin and does it on the East Coast and Sylvester Rovin does it out here on the West Coast. I'm not sure who has it where you are, but Zev is the importer, and it's fucking awesome. So check it out.
Speaking of which, I know you get it, I think, more than I do, but I get people every now and again who hit me up on Instagram and be like, hey, I want to buy this wine that you're talking about or all this thing. And I want to preface with an apology first, which is I'm sorry if you can't find it. Some of the wines we do drink are difficult to find or are stuff that Marissa or I have already had and have long been sold out.
Yeah.
Second, I don't understand the internet. Like...
Here's the thing is that I get this question every day. The truth is what I always want to say to people, but I don't necessarily have the time is, you know, these wines are limited. You are going to have a hard time finding them in some places. Go to your wine shop and start bothering them. And eventually you will start getting more natural wines and hopefully you will eventually get the wines that we're talking about and things like that. But also too, I think, and I'm actually working on a piece about this. So no one fucking steal this idea. Otherwise, I'll come after you.
We'll find you.
Yeah, we'll find you. I think what's really, I've written about it before actually though, but that like the thing to take away from this is not really finding the exact wines that we're drinking, because it's not about the exact wine. It's about having an experience. It's about finding a wine that you love so much that you, it brings you joy. And that wine for you may be very different than that wine for me. You know, you could try this exact wine and be like, you know, you might not love it, but for me, you know, I very much enjoy it. So, you know, it's something to think about. I think it's important for in the natural wine, when you're, you know, seeking out natural wine and you want to drink more natural wine and you're feeling frustrated, it's really important to remember that it's important to remember you're trying to seek out an experience. You're not trying to seek out an exact bottle.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Or at least that's something I like to say. Anyways, you wish you could have this wine.
Yeah, suckers.
Idiots. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I love everybody. Anyways, today.
So I don't know. It is in the Northern Hemisphere. If you're following winemakers on Instagram or you're observing what's going on, you might be noticing that they're amping up for something I like to call harvest.
And I like to call harvest.
Does everybody call it harvest?
I think maybe just Insane Clown Posse calls it harvest.
No,
Insane Clown Posse, actually, they didn't invent Woot Woot, but they did invent harvest.
Yeah. Yeah, so harvest is coming up. And harvest is when people harvest the grapes. So they go into the vineyards and they bring them inside and they make them into the delicious wine that we get to drink. And
the end. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
So that's how harvest happens.
No, so today we're going to go into a very broad, super broad kind of idea of what happens during harvest. We are not going to go into like fermentation and stuff because that's like a whole separate thing.
And we're, yeah, it's a very, like Marissa said, it's not detail oriented on like specifics of harvest.
So I know that you're going to send us some messages being like, you left out the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
We know. We're pulling a stuff you should know episode right now where it's just like kind of glossing along, just giving some good info.
Because I remember when I first got into wine, maybe I'm stupid, but it dawned on me. I was like, what? Harvest only happens once a year and it's this like big thing? For some reason, I had this idea that like, because, you know, I only understood fruits and vegetables from what I saw at like farmers markets and grocery stores.
And grocery stores can be very confusing because they have the fruit all year round.
Correct. So like, I didn't really truly understand that it was like, it's literally once a year and maybe for a few weeks a year, that's it. And that's harvest, and that's all you've got, and that's all that's happening.
Totally, and I also think it can be like sometimes confusing because, you know, even though it's only one type of year that they do harvest, the wines come out, you know, sporadically. So it's
correct.
Like, you know, there's fall releases, and there's spring releases, and, you know, but all those things were picked and made at the same time, basically.
Correct, correct.
So, yeah, well, let's get into it.
So harvest. So, I mean, it's as simple as it is, like we said, it's just the process of picking the grapes, but it's a more, much obviously much more complicated than that to some degree.
There is a lot of thought. I mean, great winemakers, I think, put a lot of thought into, you know, when they're picking and depending on what grape variety it is, like, you know, that can change, like those can be different days, you know. It's not like they're all right, so it's a Labor Day weekend and that's when we pick all the grapes.
Yeah,
like, you
maybe
know,
somebody does that.
I bet you there are companies out there that do that. But yeah, so it's picking the grapes and that can change a lot in terms of like when and depending on where you are.
So let's go big. Let's start big. Let's start with the whole globe. So first and foremost, we have the Northern and Southern Hemisphere. And those have different harvesting times.
Yes.
So the Northern Hemisphere, you're harvesting August to October, I guess, is a rough estimate. And then Southern Hemisphere is what, like February to April?
Yeah. But here's the deal, though. Those are like traditional harvest seasons. Without getting political, climate change is changing those things. Like, for example, I mean, I know I've like beat this horse to fucking death. But like last August when I was in Italy and I like the whole reason I ended up helping make that wine with Danilo was because like it was so hot that he had to pick early. So, you know, there are these traditional harvesting seasons, but climate change is actually affecting it in terms of, you know, when, because the grapes are either, you know, becoming riper sooner or, you know, they're taking later depending on where you are in the world. And winemakers are now having to adjust to that. So I think in the future, it's important now in the present and for the future, it's important to not think about, you know, harvest as a finite, you know, it's August and through October.
Right.
It's not
like you said, it's not like Labor Day or Christmas. It's not like it's every year. It's always at this time. Like
yeah.
It's a fluctuating, it moves and
it moves.
It is moving closer. Cause I've noticed like, just on Instagram, like, you see Verajan with, or you're seeing people being like, oh my God, it's July. Cause California's in the middle of a heat wave or
yeah.
has been in one for, I should Ever. Say middle. We have not left a heat wave for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
And you're noticing people are like, oh, wow, my grapes are riper and farther along than I had anticipated. And so I don't know. I've talked to some people, and it looks like they're moving some harvests forward.
They're having to.
But
even like in like Puglia
yeah.
in Italy, he's already harvested and started fermenting wine.
Yeah, yeah, no,
Puglia.
Yeah.
Like, it's like crazy. Like, is it just, you know, so it's not a finite thing, but traditionally, Northern Hemisphere, August through October. Southern Hemisphere, like Australia.
Yeah.
You know, that's February through April.
And that's each grape, sort of. The reason why there's sort of that wide breadth of August, October is because some grapes ripen later, some grapes ripen earlier. Also, you know.
Also, sometimes people are picking grapes, you know, on the less ripe side
yeah.
or on the riper side, depending on, you know, what the variety is. Which I guess actually I know you like we kind of had it later, but like it like that's late harvest for some stuff.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Some people, I mean, some people go into December.
Yeah,
if they're doing late harvest. We can talk about that at the end of the pod.
Well, I just feel like it fits in now since we're talking about timing.
Okay, that's yeah. So yeah, some people will wait all the way till so like dessert wines. Like so, basically, the way it works is your fruit is getting ripe. And so the longer it hangs on the vine, the riper things potentially are going to get. And there's this finite sort of game that you play, which is I want to pick at phenolic ripeness, but I also don't want mildew. I don't want a hailstorm, or I don't want shit to go bad. So you're sort of hedging your bets in some ways, and some, especially in some regions more than others, where you're like, okay, they can push it and push it and push it. Speaking of dessert wines specifically,
yeah.
right now, and they can push it and push it and push it, and then maybe something happens. That's why dessert wines are usually so expensive.
Yeah, and the reason they're doing that though is to cultivate as much sugar
correct.
Inside the grape.
Correct,
as
and
possible.
That concentration also means that there's less actual liquid, so you're you took grapes that you maybe could have made a whole barrel out of, and now you can only make a quarter of a barrel out of.
You get one bottle.
Yeah, you get one bottle.
And I'm going to post about it on Instagram, and then everyone's going to get mad.
And that, yeah, and that one bottle is all that they were able to make.
So harvest, yes, picking the grapes. But how do they know when to pick the grapes?
That is a great question, Marissa. I don't know. Anyway.
He's like, I just make wine. I don't know.
The simplest and easiest answer is Brix, which is sugar.
Yes. So Brix, when someone talks about Brix, that is the level of measurement of sugar in, you know, in a grape or in a wine. In Italian, they call them Bilbo.
Like Bilbo Baggins?
Or Bibo. Bibo. I don't know if it has an L or not. It's like Bibo.
I'm going to say it's Bilbo.
Yeah, it's something like that. I don't know. Sometimes I can't understand.
I'm a big I'm a Tolkien fan, so we're going with Bilbo.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, all I know is that I was like, wait, you mean Brix? And they were like, what? And I was like, okay, I think we're talking about the same
yeah.
thing here. So sugar is the most important thing to take into consideration when you're picking your grapes, because as we talked about earlier, sugar directly relates to how much, you know, sugar is in the grape, and then also its ripeness and alcohol.
Yeah.
So the more sugar that's in a grape, the riper it is, the bigger, the bolder the wine, and also the higher alcohol content because yeast eats the sugar and
if you yeah, and if you want to like compare that or think of like how does that relate to flavor profile? Something that's a little bit underriper and less in sugar. Imagine what it's like when you eat a peach that's underripe. It's got acidity.
It's tartar.
It's brighter. And then imagine what happens when you eat a very ripe peach. It's sugary. It's juicy. It's fruity. So those are the flavor profile stays the same in the grape world. So when you're picking something that's a little less ripe, I don't like saying underripe because that implies
yeah,
that there's something wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when you're picking something that's a little bit more ripe, and I think the average Brix that people are picking, I think this is across the board. I'm going into conventional wine with this too.
Yeah.
Is between 24 and 28.
I think it's a bit lower on the natural wine side, I think that some people are picking at like even 19 and 20 Brix.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I've seen that. And I think it just, I think it's also like too, sometimes it's to achieve a style, you know, that you're looking for. How they measure this though is with a device called a refractometer.
Yeah.
And what they do is basically you take, like you pick grapes from like all across the vineyard or like from the same variety, but like, you know, your rows, all over your rows, you mash them up and then you put a little bit of juice on this like little plate and then you cover it. And then you take what looks, it looks like a microscopic dildo thing. It looks like a very futuristic dildo that's also a microscope.
I was going to say, what's the thing that like they used to use to navigate the stars?
Kind of that too. It's like a telescope. To me, it looks like just like a crazy sharp dildo.
Okay, that's weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I'm just saying, or like a vibrator, whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyways, you put it to your, you put the telescopic futuristic dildo to your eye, and you look through it.
And you're like, how many Bilbos does that
have?
Yeah,
how many Bilbo Baggins are in this?
How many Bilbos in the dildo?
Exactly. And then it, when you put it up to the sun, it actually shows you the level of Brix on this little what looks like a thermometer. So that's how you kind of tell. But also, too, you know, a lot of winemakers take into consideration a lot of other things. I think most natural winemakers kind of pick. They definitely. I know that I don't know anyone that doesn't like test for Brix, but I also think that a lot of them are picking based on like a feeling, like they're trying the grapes.
Right, they've worked in this vineyard for 15 years, and every year that they've had great wine, the grapes have tasted or looked a certain or specific way, and they go, that reminds me of that vintage, so let's pick now.
Yeah, exactly. Or last year in Italy, like, you know, what Danilo does is, like, he opens the grapes and sees how many of the seeds, like, the pips are still green to see how acidic they are.
Yeah.
But most
winemakers looking at like the physical ripeness.
The
like
physical ripeness, yeah.
The seeds, the pips, or the skins, or the stems,
yep.
As opposed to
because if the seeds are still green, that means there's more acidity in the grape,
right?
Versus, you know, if they're turning brown already. But you know, the thing with that, and that's another part of what makes natural wine so interesting and cool, I think, is a lot of these winemakers, you know, they're just in the field like every day for these couple months, just testing and trying the grapes, just testing and trying them and looking at them and inspecting them. And when it's go time, it's fucking go time. It's like, yo, in the fields, now we got to pick, we got to go.
Yeah.
Because you want to get that shit done.
And yeah, so if you don't have a refractometer and you're not in the vineyards doing it, also people will collect the grapes and send them to labs and get their labs back. But so it's go time. But when it's go time,
what are you going to do? Are you going to, there's two things you can do. You can machine harvest or you can hand harvest.
Machine harvest or hand harvest? Big debate, I feel like.
I think it's not it's just like, I think it's one of those things that like really divides. I mean, I hate to say divides, but I mean, it's a philosophical divide between like conventional wine and natural wine. Although a lot of, I think, conventional, or definitely a divide between.
In conventional wine, there's tiers. I feel like there's a point where they go to hand harvest, but below that point, I think it's all machine
definitely
harvest.
Definitely in commercial wines.
Yes.
And by because conventional wines can be, you know, still small production and hand harvested, yes. Commercial wines are not. They're almost always machine harvested, and they do this because they get a lot more grapes this way. And we've talked about this before, but the way they do it is they have this machine that, and maybe they have other machines now, I don't know. But they have this machine that kind of goes down the vines with these rubber rods, and it hits up everything off the vine. So the problem with the upside to machine harvest is that you're getting a lot of fucking grapes. You're getting a lot of shit done for not a lot of labor.
Yeah, it's getting shit done.
It's getting shit done. The problem is that you are getting, there's no quality control in the vineyard. So you're getting ripe grapes or like correct, you know, like grapes, not correct, but grapes that, you know, how they want them to taste, whatever ripeness that is. So they're getting ripe grapes, but they're also getting underripe grapes. They're getting rotten grapes. They're getting rats, birds, bugs, leaves, all sorts of crazy shit all getting thrown in there. And like, yes, we will get to sorting and like, you know, commercial wineries will be like, well, we sort it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but think about like a tiny little rat under 2 tons of grapes. You know, you got rat's blood in there. Sorry. Like, it's just going to happen. Like, I mean, it just is what it is.
Have you ever, next time, has you ever been like, I can smell the rat's blood.
Yeah, I'm like, ooh, an armadillo is in here.
Where are armadillo? I mean, that's Texas. I guess there's
got to be. I mean,
there's got to be armadillo in a Texas wine somewhere,
or in Mexico.
Hey, Krista Scruggs, right? Doesn't she make wine in Texas?
She doesn't have any armadillos in her wine.
No, but can she shout out who has armadillos in their wine?
Please, yeah, when we have Krista on the pod, we'll be like, so, who's got armadillos? I want to drink that wine. But what natural winemakers do is they hand harvest.
Hand harvest. And some of the benefits of hand harvesting, your eyes are on everything. So you're out there. You're
and your
touching.
Mouth.
We say hand harvest.
Sucking.
Misnomer, you have to pick the grapes with your mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
a fun game, kind of like cornhole or something.
So, like, you're out there, and if you've ever seen, like, a really experienced harvester, it's fucking incredible to watch them work.
Absolutely.
Because they can just, the speed and the accuracy of what they can do and going through each vine and going and checking and getting the ripe grapes and because sometimes it depends who you are. This is where all this is why we said this is a broad stroke, because some people will do multiple passes through a vineyard, some people don't.
Yeah.
So these are sort of the things that hand harvesting allows.
And when you're hand harvesting, basically you get like a pair of clippers, like they look like garden, kind of like small garden shears. Yeah, and you're getting in there. It's kind of scary, though, because you can almost lose your fingers because your, like, hands are, like, in all the leaves and stuff, and sometimes you can't see your own hands while you're, like, clipping and you're trying to go fast, and then you got to be careful.
Yeah, especially if you're like Marissa and I, who are not experienced, and you're with a bunch of people who are very fast and good at it, and you're like, wow.
I've done it once.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, look how good and fast everyone else is, and you're, like, trying to keep up, and you want to look cool, and you're like, I can do this, and you're like, no, it's... They're very skilled at what they're doing.
Oh, they're incredible. It's sort of like really good weed trimmers. You know, just like, did a pound in 15 minutes. Where the fuck are you at?
Yeah.
Not that I've trimmed weed, but I know people that do.
And then hand harvesting, I mean, we have to get, I don't know. Do we have to get into labor issues?
Well, I will say this, like, I think it's important to mention that there are labor issues with hand harvesting. A lot of, you know, I think it is important for us to mention that, yes, there are some... issues with hand harvesting and labor. You know, it is very much a migrant job, and that's, you know, like it's not.
Yeah, not just in California, all over the world.
All over the world, yeah. So, like, for example, a lot of migrants from, like, Africa go to pick and harvest in Italy. And, you know, as much as I would, I think that would be a separate podcast that we would need someone that has more experience in that issue, because it is an issue.
Yeah, I mean, Cesar Chavez, that was his... when he was a migrant farmer, that was his whole thing, was about grape picking and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, and so it is an important issue, so I don't want us to say that we're ignoring that issue.
No.
A lot of winemakers that I know, it's more of a communal thing. Like, you know, everyone from the community goes and helps. One of my favorite stories that I heard was from El Jalapeans, Gloria. She makes Sumol in Catalonia, and she was like on vacation, but her neighbors like realized that her grapes were like ready to be picked.
Yeah,
and
crazy that she went on vacation during harvest.
I think it was an early harvest.
Okay.
I forget exactly. It might have been lost a little bit in translation, but basically she wasn't there.
Yeah,
and her neighbors went and picked all of her grapes for her. And granted, she has like a really small farm. And maybe she was on vacation, but for whatever reason, she was away. She was away, and her neighbors went and picked all the grapes.
That's
for
amazing.
Her. Yeah, like, or picked the grapes for her.
Well, harvest can be, especially, like, if it's an opportunity for a lot of people to go and volunteer or help out.
Absolutely, and learn about these things.
And it's a lot of work, and it is manual labor, but it's also a fun time. A lot of times you go to these places, and people are popping bottles and drinking beers and just drinking and having, and you're working, you know.
It's wine, man.
12 to 16-hour days, but you're really, really, it's kind of like, in some weird way, it's like wine summer camp.
Yeah. I'm really sad because I was supposed to go to Italy to do harvest this year, and then it didn't work out because of some issues that, because I was supposed to go with Danilo, some issues he was having with his vineyards. And he was like, I don't think this is a good year for you to come and learn, you know, from me about these things. So I'm a little bummed, but I loved it. Like when I did it, like when I personally was harvesting last year, for the short period of the one day that I did it.
Yeah.
I fucking loved it. It was like the most zen I've ever felt in my whole life, because it like brought my ADHD and my OCD together. So I could just like, I was like, oh my God, I could just clip the grapes.
You should get into bonsai.
I know, right?
Yeah.
No, there's something about being outside and like in nature and like just being able to focus on one thing, and then having like, there's something with writing that for me, I never feel a sense of completion. Like, nothing is ever done. It's either just...
Oh, no, this is definitely a task that you're like, we finished!
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh my gosh, I filled a crate. Yeah. One crate done. Yeah. I did it. Whereas, like, with writing, I'm like, ugh. It's like, it's just overdue.
For
it's
those
never
of you
done.
That don't know, Marissa's writing a 5,000-page... nonfiction, time travel epic, and she's just been working on it for a really long time. It's her grand opus.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's my Mr. Holland's opus. What's funny is that I mean that's not entirely wrong. I mean there wasn't. I mean it's not a time travel thing, but maybe it will be now since it's not done. Anyways, Harvesting's rad. But. There's also a time, like, you also have to choose the time that you're picking at, you know?
I was going
to
say, I've driven up the 101 sometimes, and I'll be going late at night because I like to drive at night.
And you're like, I got to eat some In-N-Out, and there's no line right now.
Yeah, if I go to the one in Paso Robles, I won't have to worry about it. It's 3 hours, but I...
It's good.
Yeah.
It takes 3 hours to get to an In-N-Out in L.A. anyways.
Yeah. And I'll be driving, and you see a bunch of people with headlamps on, harvesting. You're like, oh, and again, when I was like, why are these people doing it at night? That seems like a slight disadvantage. Yeah. But in reality, it is an advantage.
It's a huge advantage because, so the thing with, it's an advantage to pick at night because then the grapes are cooler. And so then when they bring them into the winery, they don't have to cool them down.
Right, it's from cool to cool.
Yeah, it's cool to cool. So the grapes are already at the temperature that they should be before they start doing all the other stuff that we're not going to get into today. But so the grapes are at a cooler temperature. It also stabilizes the sugars.
Yeah, to some degree.
And also, they're less likely to break skins.
Right.
The grapes
are less fragile.
Yeah, the grapes are less fragile. So because when the grapes are warm, you know, like think about eating a grape when you're at like a barbecue.
It's been out in the sun for a while.
You know, you're like a little stoned, so you head back over to the snack table that's been like ignored for the last 4 hours because the host is wasted, and you're like,
there's a wasp you have to swat away,
and you're like, I'm gonna eat this grape, and you're like, whoa, that was gushy
hot.
And hot. Yeah. So they want to pick at night to like stay, not only because the grapes stay cooler, because if they don't pick at night, they then have to cool the grapes down.
Yeah.
Which takes a lot of energy and time and just money. And it's also...
it's easier for the people picking.
Yeah, I mean, no one wants to be... Especially, like, in California...
Where it's, like, 100 fucking degrees.
Or like, anywhere, you know? Yeah. Like, as now that, you know, the seasons are, like, getting... I mean...
You're already doing, like, back-breaking manual labor. Why do I also have to do it in the heat?
Yeah, dude, because it gets to be, like, 100 degrees, you know, and you're out there. And the thing with, too, is you're not... As someone that did pick in shorts and a tank top...
Yeah.
Because I didn't know I was going to have to go pick grapes. You don't want to be in shorts and a tank top because there's thistles and like all sorts of shit and like bugs. And, you know, you need to be able to like, you know, you have to like wear appropriate attire. Like you got to be in if it's 100 degrees out and you're in a jumpsuit, a lot of burps.
Yeah, a lot of. We're drinking
LaCroix
and sparkling wine.
I mean, we're at my house. I don't know what you want. So, yeah, it's just better.
No, yeah, it's just and also... Also, there's something really enjoyable about cracking a beer when you're done harvest at like 9 a.m. and you're like, I deserve this.
And then they're like, go clean the cellar.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck.
You're like, barrels need to be fucking scrubbed.
Hosed, yeah. Yep. Because there's a lot of other work that goes into harvest.
There's a lot. Harvest is, and that's another thing. Harvest is sort of go time for vineyards. It's
nonstop.
Yeah. It is their most.
You're working 16 hours a day. You're waking up at 4 in the morning or, like, you know, or you're staying up all night. Not only are you harvesting the grapes, but you're, like, cleaning. I mean, if you're a good, you know, good wineries, they're cleaning.
Constantly.
Like, constantly. Like, you know, they're hosing out, like power.
Power scrubbers. Yeah, power washers.
Power washers. Like, you know, all the equipment.
Do you ever go on power washing porn on Reddit? It's not porn. It's just people who have power washed something for the first time, and it like they do like a before and after photo. Fucking crazy.
Wow.
Everybody needs a power wash.
I was like, immediately was like, power washer porn. So you don't need one of those shower heads that comes off? I could just get a power washer just like really get my clit going.
It was it's not porn. It's like when they say food porn.
I know, but that doesn't always mean something, because one time I looked up wine porn and I was just like, what is it? And I was like, oh, it's just porn. It's just like women sticking bottles up their vagina, and I was like, whoa, this is aggressive.
And now our podcast is aggressive.
Our podcast is always aggressive. So So harvest is a hard time. It's 14 hours a day. But we're not even done. We're not even done with
harvest.
Yeah, because then they have to, sort it all.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And some do some. So yes, now we have to sort. Let's go to sorting.
Yeah.
So you've picked your grapes. They're in bins. You've brought them into your winery, or you're bringing them into your winery. You're excited because you're going to start making wine, and that's why we're here. That's what we're doing. That's what this is about. But before you go from the vineyard into the winery, you can sort.
You can sort. And like, people have different ways of sorting.
So let's go back to the machine harvesting. So we just finished machine harvesting and we have 10 million bins of all different types of grapes. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to get a big conveyor belt out, and we're going to have a forklift, or maybe the machine does it, and we're going to dump these bins onto these giant conveyor belts, and the grapes are going to run down these conveyor belts, and we're going to have all the people that just harvested, or maybe different people, and we're going to start...
You only have Lucy and actually Ethel.
It's Lucy and Ethel. That's exactly what I was going to say.
For our younger viewers, there's a show once upon a time called I Love Lucy. Check it out.
Yeah, it's actually very funny.
It is. And
she's a comic genius.
Lucille Ball was a comedic genius. There's a little episode about them sorting chocolates.
And they just eat a bunch of them. You've probably seen it redone a thousand times on everything. But anyway.
I love that I think that like cool young kids listen to us.
Yeah. I like that you think that cool young kids don't know what I Love Lucy is.
I don't know, man. I had someone I thought was a cool young kid ask me about the Beatles like last summer. And I was like, what? They're like, what's a Beatles?
That's not true.
That is absolutely 1,000% true. They were 17.
Stop. Stop the pod. If you don't know what the Beatles or I Love Lucy are right now, stop the pod. Get off the pod. Go do some research. Delve into the Beatles and I Love Lucy. They're important. They're musts.
Yeah, I mean, they're very important. They're just cultural relevancy, it doesn't matter.
Anyway, so... They're sorting a la I Love Lucy, and you're picking out either the underripe grapes or the leaves or the rat blood or the... And it's
licking
going
down. Up their rat blood. They're like, this is what keeps us young. Let's rub it under our eyes.
L'Oreal is on the other side collecting
the
rat.
Yeah, L'Oreal's like, so if you could just like funnel that off into our eye cream, that would be great.
So it's going down this giant conveyor belt. And, it does have this ominous sort of... I don't want to paint it, but it does look very
industrial.
Industrial.
Well, that's what they are. That's why they're commercial wines. Yeah.
There are different levels of that. There are people who are not commercial wineries who will use conveyor belts to do sorting. There's also people who will just sort of, they'll dump it onto tables and do sorting. There's people who were...
And what are they looking for when sorting?
So you're looking for, I guess...
Armadillos!
Ripe grapes, right? So you're looking for... Because you have these whole clusters, these big clusters.
Yeah, because when they clip them, it's not like they're clipping
individual grapes. Yeah, we forgot to mention that.
They're clipping a whole bunch, like an actual...
And they can be huge. Some of these can be as big as my head.
Yeah. Adam has a very big head.
Very large head. I wear my hat on like the second or third.
It is the second. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big head.
Yeah.
metaphorically and physically.
Thank you. That means I'm smart. So
I think it just means you're an asshole.
Never mind.
It's okay. My head is like three times the size of yours, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
I don't even know how you got in this room.
I know. It's so hard. It's like I have to come in at an angle like you're bringing in a couch. Sorry. So you're sorting the grapes.
So now I lost my train.
L'Oreal's there.
So they're looking at the ripeness. And so there is some controversy. I don't know if it's controversy, but there's some debate on sorting, and there are some people who believe that sorting shows the pinnacle of terroir. If you have nothing but perfect grapes, then you're showing perfect terroir. There's other people that believe that if you don't sort and you're throwing in those underripe grapes or maybe a couple grapes that are not ideal or perfect, that that shows perfect terroir, because then you're showing the true fingerprint of the vineyard.
And the vintage, the true vintage.
Correct. So there's debate, and I think that both sides probably are correct in some way.
Yeah, and I think, so again, I feel like I just am repeating, anyways, it doesn't matter. When I was harvesting with Danilo, as I begin every story these days, it's like either Rick and Morty or when I was harvesting with Danilo. The one day. Like, I know I'm an asshole. Don't worry, everyone. You don't have to let me know.
We just talked about how her head doesn't fit in this room.
Yeah, exactly.
And but she has a double. She has French doors.
It's true. It's true. Actually, I wish I had French doors. That'd mean I was rich. Anyways, something really interesting, though, that I noticed that he was doing when we were making this wine is that there was no sorting in the sense that you've been talking about, where like the grapes were all put out. But what he did was, you know, there's a huge stack of like Chile Jolo grapes. And I was watching him, like, he would scan kind of over the top of the crate and be like, you know, some of them he'd put to this one side and some of them he'd put in. He'd start actually doing stuff with. He didn't go through the crates, but he just like kind of looked at them. And I asked him, I was like, what are you looking for? And he was like, oh, I'm looking for the bunches that are greener, that have more, because that means they have more acidity, to put in first. And so while I couldn't really follow up with him because he was very busy being a winemaker and I was busy like hosing shit down and whatever. But I think that's a way to also control like the flavor profile. Like if you're using the acidic grapes first, you know, you can kind of like,
right. You're adding the fruit to it.
Yeah.
Sort
you're
of.
Adding the fruit to it and like kind of like being able to control some of the flavor profile. If you're,
absolutely.
Like, he was continuously tasting the juice.
Yeah.
And so then it was like, oh, you want to start like with the highest acid and then like add the sugar kind of as you go. It seemed like. Not 100%.
It's like cooking, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like as you add seasoning, you taste as you go, and then you're like, it is perfectly seasoned now. I don't need to add any more seasoning.
I could be 100% wrong, but like I know for a fact that that's he was doing it for acidity, and like that's the thing that would make sense to me.
Yeah.
But because he is one of those people that doesn't sort, like, you know, he doesn't pull out like the individual.
He's not feeling, pulling out individual bunches and being like, this individual bunch is not worthy of being in my wine.
Yeah, no. It's more like, all right, these bunches are this.
Yeah.
Let's add that now. And so, you know, I think, and it goes kind of back to what we always say about natural wine in general is like, you know, all of this is like up to the producer that's the winemaker.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
That's making the wine, you know?
This is sort of where my debate about, you know, the concept of terroir doesn't exist. This sort of falls into mine. It's like how much decision making is being made by the winemaker that then influences things. I when I say terroir doesn't exist, I'm not saying that terroir is not real.
I don't know. That's exactly what it means.
I'm saying that terroir doesn't exist in the sense that, like, yes, each individual place has its own individual climate, and I understand that, and I believe that, but I'm saying that the winemaker supersedes that, and that everything the winemaker does overrides that.
Yeah, but if the winemaker is doing everything that they can to preserve the terroir,
it's still the winemaker. This is my belief.
But then I think that you just need to figure out another way to say that, because saying that terroir doesn't exist is not like saying terroir does not exist is a very concrete statement that you make a lot.
So here,
I think you need to just figure out a better. I think that instead of saying that terroir doesn't exist, I think you should start saying winemakers supersede terroir.
Well, let me put
that would be clearer.
Let me.
And then I could stop fielding questions about why you don't believe in terroir.
Here's an anecdotal story that I can tell.
Yeah, tell it while I go get more wine.
So it's an anecdotal story of you have two winemakers. They live right next door to each other. Let's say it's the year 2100 and they're farming on the moon and they have.
I love this story. I thought this was a real story, but keep going.
All right, so they're farming on the moon, and
also, how did you get the prompt for my 5,000 word opus? I don't understand.
And they both have really like what they would call. They would both say they have exceptional moon terroir, and one neighbor decides that he wants to make sparkling wine, and the other neighbor decides he's going to make still red wine. The neighbor who decides he's going to make sparkling wine harvests August 25th, moon time, And his wine is at 19 bricks when he harvests. And he makes perfect, beautiful moon petnat. And it's everyone says...
Marissa Ross just goes bananas for this moon.
Yeah, she's like, this is the best moon petnat I've ever had.
It reminds me of the Lamedia Creek.
It is so terroir-driven of the moon. It is so perfect. One day later, the guy is going to harvest his still red wine. And it rains. And it rains... And it rains and it rains and it rains and it rains. And so he's now October 26th, and he picked his grape. He's like, I can't believe it rained on the moon. It's never supposed to rain on the moon. How did it rain on the moon? And he goes and he makes his wine, and his wine now, because of the decision he made of when to harvest, going back to what we've been talking about, is now awful and just fucking awful. It's washed out. It's bad. It's rained on. He can't even use native yeast anymore because it got so rainy. He has to inoculate if he wants to make wine, or he just doesn't make wine at all. So he has this wine, and it's one day later, and everyone tastes it, and they go, this wine is awful. This wine shows no terroir. This wine is washed out. Did you inoculate? What is this? And it just goes, that simple decision of when to harvest. I know this is a very anecdotal story, and I know that this is really distilled down, but all I'm saying is that...
I feel like it's more of a fictional story, too.
It's a little fictional. I just used the moon because I didn't want people to think that I was talking about anybody in particular.
He was talking about moon. moon wine.
The earth is flat, god damn it. And the moon makes wine.
Elon Musk is already up there making Sansair, motherfuckers.
No.
You think he just made a spaceship to go into space? He's up there
harvesting grapes, making wine.
He really wants it on this natural ship, man.
So what I'm saying is that the decision of the winemaker, as simple as the idea of harvest, can so greatly affect everything that to believe that terroir is what is making your wine this thing is almost like people saying that it's like someone saying like, oh, I don't write this beautiful music. God just speaks to me. And like maybe they
feel
that.
A lot
of
people do say that.
I know,
shit.
But do you believe God is telling them to write this stuff?
Well, I'm an atheist, so I mean, I'm the wrong person to be asking.
That's what I'm saying. I
bet you there's some people, though, that are like, yeah, motherfucker, God did tell them.
God told Kid Rock to write that song.
We don't know what God's music interests are.
I mean, if I was going to say by what's going on in the world right now,
God
loves Kid Rock.
Yeah. God. That's one thing that we can agree on. If there is a God, he fucking loves Kid Rock, and he fucking loves white hooded fashion.
Definitely says woot woot.
Definitely says woot woot. Yeah. Also is very into Twitter.
Fuck.
Also super into Alex Jones.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Adam, I will say this. You make a very valid point there. And I agree with you. I agree with you. But I think you're still wrong.
That's okay.
In the sentence. In the very concrete... I think to say that terroir doesn't exist, though.
Maybe my language is a bit harsh, and I think you're extreme.
Yeah, I think that you're just like, well, I'm an all or nothing person.
Yeah.
So I speak in like absolutes, which I'm working on, not only because Ben is constantly like, oh my God, there's such a thing as gray. Yeah, and also my therapist is like, you really need to, it's not this or that. And I'm like, yes, it is. Terroir exists, Dr. Puga. God damn it. And she's like, no one is here talking about terroir, Marissa.
You're like, moon wine.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, Elon Musk is already on it. What am I going to do? No, I actually totally agree with what you're saying. But I think, yeah, but I still think that then the winemaker needs to make the decisions to
what he thinks or she thinks is best in the best interest
of
the
terroir. Yes. I personally think that.
I understand that.
That's just like my personal. That's just like my personal.
It's a very holistic in some ways.
No, but for me, for me, the thing about it is that the reason I started writing about wine is because it could take me somewhere.
No, and I'm not taking. I don't want to take you away from that.
No. But I mean, it's a personal preference. It's like I want a wine to taste like it's from somewhere, even if it's somewhere I've never been, because it allows me the opportunity to. Experience a place through taste, you know, like
right.
I don't. And so I think that I agree with you. I completely fucking agree with you. Like, and also too, like a certain vintage can totally change the terroir of a place. You know, like the 2015 Beaujolais vintage
is
so fucking hot and insane and like doesn't taste anything like the rest of Beaujolais the years before. But So I agree with you, and I'm glad that we had this. Adam, I'm really happy that we're communicating and going through this. I agree with you. I just think that maybe you should choose your words more wisely.
I should be less extreme.
Yeah, because to say the terroir doesn't exist, I don't think that either one of us
truly believes that. I don't believe that.
I know that you don't truly believe that. That's why it's like when you say it.
I think
I think you've gotten scammed by a lot of motherfuckers when you were a wine buyer.
It's even more, I want people to stop thinking that, like, I also am trying to fight this idea that there's like a hierarchy in terroir. And like,
well, there isn't a hierarchy in
and
terroir.
I think the terroir, like when I say terroir doesn't exist, I'm also trying to like break down that idea, which is like just Burgundy is not better than every other place in the world just because it's Burgundy.
I completely agree with you, but to say that wines from Burgundy taste like wines from Burgundy taste different than wines from, you know, the Czech Republic. You know, like if you have a...
I make it the same way they make it in the Czech Republic.
Well, not if you do carbonic, I guess, in both places. But
yeah, or I use 100% new oak, or I...
No, if you mask the terroir. Okay. Boom, bitch, get out the way. Like, terroir exists, but the winemaker is just as important as... there is terroir and there are winemakers.
There are winemakers. And there, I guess I should change it to be... Maybe I'm just high off this Frizzante wine. But
La Med, dead.
But maybe it's equal. Maybe a,
well, I think maybe it depends on the 50-50. Winemaker.
Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's like a marriage.
Well,
maybe
I think it's what the winemaker prioritizes.
Yeah.
Like, there are winemakers that... there are certain winemakers that are very much about producing wine that... I think is very ego driven.
Yes, absolutely. I would say 99% of the wine in the world is made out of ego.
Absolutely, but I would say that there are some winemakers that are making wines that are almost like their children in the sense that they want, like, I'm not saying that this is why you had a kid, but you know, some people want, like, you know, it's an ego driven thing to have a child.
I had a child so that he could do all the things that I failed at and succeed at them. Yeah. I'm putting all of the pressure of my failures onto my son.
I'm saying that, like, you know, some people want to see the reflection of themselves and something else. And so I think that there are some winemakers that are making wine to see a reflection of themselves.
Yeah, he's already in tap dancing classes.
Perfect.
He can't even walk.
I love it. I tap dance too. But then there are winemakers that, well, still ego-driven. I think that anyone that's like successful has to be ego-driven to some degree.
Or creates.
Yeah, definitely. There are some winemakers that prioritize terroir. Like,
yeah.
You know, and that's, it's a prior. And so in that sense, you know, in this debate, I guess, point Adam, because yes, the winemaker has to choose to highlight the terroir. Like that is a choice that the winemaker makes. But that doesn't mean that terroir doesn't exist.
No. And bringing it back to the pot, this, we deviated a slight, but I still think it relates to what we've been talking about. And this is where harvest and everything that we've talked about comes into play on the wines you're drinking and how they are and what they're going to be like.
What they're tasting like.
It all starts, there's a lot more, but like one of the places that is really an important place where it starts is when it's harvested, how it's harvested, what the decisions are made during the harvest.
Absolutely.
And that is where, like, when you're drinking wines, you have to remember that it's not just what was happening in the cellar, but it was also what was happening in the vineyard.
Yeah, and I think that those are, you know, those are two equal things. I think in an earlier podcast, we kind of, you know, we put a lot of emphasis on, like, what was happening in the cellar, maybe where some people thought that, like, we were kind of ignoring how much goes on in the farming. There's so much happens in the vineyard with farming and with harvest. And
wine is farming.
Yeah, wine is farming, but it's not just farming. But you know, I don't want to come off because there's a big thing where, like, a lot of people are like, natural wine's just farming, man. And it is that, but it's also winemaking, and it is terroir, but it is also winemakers. And
I just had this really, like, in my head, it's this very beautiful thought about harvest and why harvest has this like connotation and why it means so much and like what harvest means.
Tell me more.
Yeah. Ready? So harvest is the intersection between nature and man, or God and man.
I like that.
And so it's the moment where we take what is from the outside and bring it on to the inside. And it's this connection from the earth to our soul. And it's in those moments are we, as humans, putting our hands into something, and we're bringing what Mother Nature or what God or whatever you want to believe created. and we're bringing it now into our home, and now we're taking care of that, and now we, and it's this symbiotic relationship between, you know, whatever you believe and who we are as people.
Adam, I mean the audience can't see this, but I was clutching my chest. I mean, I'm gonna cry. I think that was really beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's why harvest is such an important thing.
Yeah, that's
and,
really,
and
it's
why
a beautiful
we all
thought.
Like. Thank you, thank
that
you.
That was a beautiful lot of thoughts. That was like a string of pearl thoughts.
I never really thought of it in that aspect before. That it's this almost this like a sacramental moment of like. Harvest is held really highly in a lot of people's
eyes.
It is.
And it's also like it's a very communal thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's when I know that we touched on earlier how there are some labor dispute issues, but I know a lot of people that a lot of winemakers, you know, that it's like the whole community comes out and like,
yeah.
it's working
but love.
Together. Yeah. Man, I wanted to, I feel like I wanted to like deviate on some dumb shit, but now I'm like, I feel like we should probably leave it on that note.
Okay. Well, really... yeah, it's all love, everybody. And don't forget that.
Wow, Adam.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Yeah, we love you. Marissa and I love you.
We love you.
We love you.
Now I have a.
She's booking her next therapist appointment right
now. Yeah. I'm like, okay. So this Venn diagram between spirituality and me and harvest and, you know, what does this mean for my growth? Am I an atheist anymore? I don't know. Maybe I believe in.
I believe in God when it's convenient for me to believe in God.
All right. This is okay. We're going to go.
All right.
Goodbye.
Anyway, bye. Oh, wait, was that
grinding?
I don't know how the beat
is. You know what I'm saying? I like it. Potting.
Always been about potting, never been about fame. Whenever there wasn't potting, there was always cocaine.
Oh, my gosh. That can go like at the end or something. Just stop it again so you have a clean cut.